Welcome to Catholic Sports View, a look at the athletes and coaches who shape the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Welcome to Catholic Sports View. I am Bob Gibson. We're sure glad you joined us this week. Lots to talk about. We've got a couple of big interviews coming up for you as well. So stick around. Lots to talk about here in the Trinity League as we do every single week. Let's start out with football, because the football season is going to get ready into the playoffs here. We know the seedings for the first round. The much talked about CIF Southern Section seedings have been announced. We'll give this to you in just a second, but let's run through the scoreboard really quick from the Trinity this past weekend. Modern Day 48-17 over Servite. No surprise there. St. John Bosco, no problem with Santa Margarita, 56-14. So the top two teams hold their spots. Modern Day wins the Trinity League again. St. John Bosco finishes second. They've been 1-2 for as long as any of us have been around. It seems like not quite that long, but it certainly feels that way. It's going to be up to some of these other teams to step up and try to make a run at those top two teams here in the near future. And it would make for a more competitive league too. Even though we've got some great football teams in this league, it doesn't diminish any of them. The one upset along the way, and I think some people consider it an upset. I didn't, because I know JCR is a really good football team. JCR 21-7 over Orange Lutheran. So that's only a surprise in that Orange Lutheran only got 7 points in this game, but that JCR defense can be really tough. We've seen that throughout the season. So what happened there is that forced a three-way tie for third place in the Trinity League. So they flipped some coins. Actually, they took some envelopes out. It was a blind envelope draw. JCR ended up winning that. So they are the third-place team out of the Trinity. Orange Lutheran fourth, Santa Margarita fifth. Despite a lot of people probably thinking Orange Lutheran and Santa Margarita had better seasons than what JCR had. Doesn't matter. JCR came up at the right time. Servite, with their loss, 0-5 in league, 1-9 on the season. They don't get a playoff berth. So people were talking about Servite maybe getting an at-large berth in a lower division. That did not happen for the Friars. They did not get a playoff berth, even though they had applied to see if they could get one. So what that means now, as far as the CIF Southern Section football playoffs, is this. Every team from the Trinity League has made, except for Servite, has made the Division I bracket. Modern Day gets a bye in the first round. Santa Margarita and JCR will play one another in the first round. Long Beach Poly, Los Alamitos, Corona Centennial, Mission Viejo, St. John Bosco, all in the Division I bracket, all get byes. The only other game being played that first week of the playoffs, Edison versus Orange Lutheran. Man, what a couple of great matchups we have here. Edison, Orange Lutheran. Edison's had a great year. We know what Olu's done. Santa Margarita, JCR, another Trinity showdown between those two teams. It's going to be classic. It's going to be a lot of fun. That Division I bracket is going to be a lot of fun to follow, and we will be following it as we go along. Let's move over to girls volleyball, where everything is decided for the Trinity League. Unfortunately for Modern Day, they do not get through the pool play. They lose a close one to MiraCosta, 3-2. So MiraCosta goes on to the finals against Sierra Canyon. Congratulations and good luck to both those programs. Modern Day just coming up short. We already know in Division II, all our Trinity League teams had already been defeated there. So no championships in girls volleyball for the Trinity this year, unfortunately. But what a season nonetheless from all of our great programs. How about boys water polo? Because we're going to hear from one of their coaches here just coming up in just a minute. Round one of the Open Division Water Polo Playoffs. JCR is the top seed. They will play Los Alamitos in the opening round. Modern Day also in that Open Division. They will play Loyola, same side of the bracket as one another. So a potential JCR Modern Day matchup in the semifinal in Division One. So we will not see both those teams in the final. We hope to see them in the semifinal as both teams put in that bracket. Over in Division One, where a couple of our other Trinity League teams reside, Servite. They are in the first round of the Division I playoffs. They will play Santa Barbara in the first round. Orange Lutheran will take on a very good Aliso Niguel team. So good luck to all of our Trinity League teams in the water polo playoffs and the football playoffs as well as all those get underway. All right, we got a lot to talk about and a couple of great guests this week. And let's kick it off by talking with the head water polo coach at JCR High School. We were just talking about those playoffs that are upcoming. Brett Ormsby.
Coach, thanks for taking a couple of minutes and joining us here on the show. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
The number one team in Division One right now. And that really says something because in water polo, as we know, man, it is a crazy, talented field of teams that reside here in Southern California. So to be number one ranked like you are, that really does say something, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a competitive group, especially, you know, at the top of the Southern section, as you indicated. So yeah, it's been a great season so far, a competitive season. And here we are in our final week of the regular season and then heading into playoffs next week.
As I look at your schedule here, 19-3, obviously first place in the Trinity, your couple of losses that you've had on the year, I think were all avenged, actually. You beat the teams that you end up.
Losses.
Max Preps has you for a third loss. So we'll go ahead and we're going to correct Max Preps there. We're going to give them a timeout. we'll give them a red card. We'll get them out of there. Two losses on the season.
I actually went through this today because I'm on the coaches advisory group that does the seating stuff. So we're actually, I believe we're 22-2 right now.
Okay.
22-2.
22-2. Yeah, that is the other mark I see here as well. So we're going to go with that one. Max Preps is out. We're not going with that one. 22-2, both losses on the season, both avenged, I believe.
Yes.
Newport Harbor and a team from Connecticut early on in the season. Obviously, those battles with Harbor are huge. They're right up there in the rankings as well. The concentration of talent here, it's almost hard to believe, right? There's so many great water polo players here in Southern California. Is it just because we're so close to the beach? So many kids grow up, playing these water sports.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that it's sort of been the case for, I don't know, 60 years now, it seems like. Newport Harbor is a great place to look at.
Yeah, for sure.
They were already dominant like back in the 60s, and then they have been pretty much all the way through. And so if you look at a place like that, it's like, yeah, near the beach, you know, it's a very, very aquatic community. Swimming, I don't think the connection between swimming and water polo is as strong as some people think. I think it's more a connection between the beach culture, surfing, lifeguarding, and water polo a lot of times, you know. And so, yeah, like Southern California and particularly Orange County has historically always produced, you know, top talent. And, you know, hopefully we see that change and we can become a more kind of national sport, but it's very regional right now. California for sure. And if you want to narrow it down even more, Southern California is where a lot of the top programs and top talent seems to reside.
You know, I mentioned Harbor. Of course, the legendary coach there, Bill Barnett, who was there for 40 years, something like that. I mean, right? Just such a long time and such a dominant program. I mean, is that sort of the blueprint for water polo in Southern California? Is that what Coach Barnett was able to accomplish with the Sailors?
Well, water polo has changed a lot. High school sports has changed a lot.
Sure.
Since his time. And, you know, in particular, private schools, I think the blueprint is different than it is at public schools. Like if you're a public school, certainly that's an example of a place you'd want to look at. And historically speaking, you know, Coronado, I'm from San Diego and I spent the first portion of my coaching career in San Diego. Coronado is a very similar sort of dynamic to Newport. So yeah, like if you're a big public school, you want to be close to the beach. You want to have an aquatic community. In more recent years, if you look at modern day or, you know, some of our success,
absolutely,
like it's certainly a little bit different because you're a private school and, you know, so kids are coming from a broader geographical region.
Yeah, you're right. Southern California, but if we go even micro, even more of the Trinity League, certainly the level of play within the Trinity. You know, you mentioned the difference between the public and the private schools. Because kids choose to go to your school, they choose to go to a modern day or a Servite, a school like that, more of a chance to get those kids who want to focus in on water polo and find that right program for them.
Yeah. And again, it's just the fact that, people have the ability to find a school, that fits their needs, you know, and so having that ability means that, you know, players are going to potentially arrive from different areas and you can build in a little bit different way. So ever since I've been at JCIRA, I mean, we've gone from Division IV non-qualifier in 2018, not that long ago, Division IV non-qualifier. We were sub 500. We were 1-5 in league. We didn't even make playoffs for Division IV to here where we are today. And my approach has always just been like, you know, a little bit of like, if you build it, they will come. And if you do things the right way and you consistently do things the right way, you know, it builds on itself. You know, you start to get like-minded people, like-minded families and together. And that's kind of what's happened for us here.
Brett Ormsby is the head coach of the number one ranked water polo program in Southern California right now. The J. Sarah Lions, is the season is wrapping up. A couple more games for you and then it'll be playoff time, right? Obviously as a coach, one game at a time, but excited about what the postseason could potentially be for your squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right though. It's one game at a time and we can't afford to have a lack of focus or slip ups or looking ahead. We play Cathedral Catholic today. In fact, in a couple hours, 2 hours, we play Cathedral and that'll be our senior day. So that'll be kind of exciting to celebrate this group of seniors. We have seven just phenomenal seniors, like just great players, great human beings, great families. And so we look forward to celebrating them today and, you know, hopefully playing some good water polo, to send them out on a positive note. We go to Olu on Wednesday and, you know, Olu's always a tough place to play. That's in league and, it'll be the final league match of the year. And for us, Trinity League title is on the line, you know, and so that would be a first in school history. So we have a lot to focus on in these two games. You know, I think that sort of helps us to stay focused on the present, the end of the regular season, before we start to look ahead to playoffs. And certainly we're excited about the opportunities that present themselves there, but we got to take care of our business here first.
Right. Senior day is obviously a lot of fun. What's it like for you as a coach to see kids come in as, you know, as a little 14-year-old freshman and obviously, you know, different levels of experience within water polo, I would imagine at that point, but to see them progress in their 4 years and get to this point now where, some of these guys will go on to play in college. They'll become, it's not rare to see somebody come out of the Trinity and become a national player. So, you know, what's it like to see the progression of these kids from freshman to senior?
Well, I think the most enjoyable part is watching the personal development, honestly. Like they change so much as people. Yeah. So certainly as water polo players, look, there's the obvious stuff. Like between your freshman and your senior year, you're going to get stronger. You're going to get bigger. You're going to get faster. And then obviously we focus a lot on our skill development and our tactical knowledge and becoming students of the game. So it is fun to watch that process. You know, I watch a kid like Johan Thrall, who's a senior for us, who, you know, when he came in was kind of one type of player and he has really molded himself. And it's just been so evident the conscious effort he's put into shoring up weaknesses, you know, and just becoming a more well-rounded player. And so it's always fun to watch that evolution, but it's also just fun. Like I teach on campus, you know, I have a lot of these kids actually in class when they're juniors. Mm-hmm. I see them at lunch. My assistant coach, Drew Clute, is also on campus with us here. And we're just like, we're together with the kids a lot and we know the kids pretty well. And so like watching that development of them as human beings, I mean, kids change so much between, you know, 14 and 18. And right. So that's the part that's most fun. And just knowing that like, as you send them off, hopefully by then you've established some bonds that can be long lasting, you know, like I still have relationships with a lot of my players that I coached over a decade ago and I still talk to some of them quite regularly. And that's like, we're talking now about whatever they're doing in business or their marriage. And like, so that's really like the coolest part, I think, is watching that personal development.
Yeah, for sure. Those bonds start pretty early in the mornings on most practice days, right? Or early on in the season, even before games begin, right? And all that training, kind of go through that with us a little bit. What's it like to be obviously the head coach, but then a kid that's on the other end of that grueling training that it takes to become a top water polo player? I know this is not a sport for the weak physically or mentally.
No, not at all. I mean, it's funny because we have, right now we're working with, we have a performance coach, who we've contracted with, who's like, a former like Olympic level triathlete, like professional level triathlete. So she's put herself into some pretty grueling training sessions, as you can imagine. And it's been interesting for her to watch water polo really up close because she's like, oh my gosh, this sport is so anaerobic. Like your heart rate is so high. You're acting in oxygen debt all the time. Like, and I'll never forget my college coach, Adam Krikorian, who's now with the women's national team, who like him has really made a point over the years to say that like water polo develops like really strong people, like beyond the water, like in their careers and in their family lives and all that. And part of it is because if you're involved in water polo, you're going to be confronted with failure every single day. You're going to be beaten down And you got to learn to accept failure and see it as a process in learning. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, we go 6 a.m., you know, we train 6 to 8:30 most mornings. You know, the guys lift pretty hard. They swim pretty hard. They were pretty creative with, I think, how we train. And our boys right now are like awesome about it too. Like one thing I never have to ask for is better effort during the physical activities. Mm. You know, like they're willing to really put themselves out there.
That's a sign of a good team, obviously. You know, water polo has become such an international sport now. Maybe it always was, or it's been that way for a very long time, but, certainly on the international scene, there's many countries playing, high levels of water polo. Do you see those kids coming to the U.S. and wanting to be part of what U.S. water polo has to offer?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no question. You see a lot of international athletes coming in for college, you know, and that like, that's just a career path for the kids. I mean, like if you're growing up in a lot of the top countries in water polo are European countries, in particular, like Eastern European countries, Hungary, Croatia, Serbia, Montenegro, Greece, you know, and if you're growing up in those countries, like coming to the United States for college is like a huge leg up. And so in particular, like the best water polo schools in the U.S. are phenomenal academic institutions. I mean, the quote unquote big four of Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC. I mean, any national ranking is going to have those all at the very top. And then you have the Ivies, Princeton and Harvard and Brown. And there's so many great schools with water polo. Right. So I think that's the big draw. So you see the collegiate landscape being fairly heavy international at this time. And that's a lot of people coming over here to get access to the education and the future career success.
Brad Ormsby joins us from J. Sarah High School. He is the boys' water polo coach over there as we continue our conversation this week on Catholic Sports View. I look at your coaching staff, and obviously you're going to have one heck of a staff with you, and you do. One name that stands out, though, is a former Trinity League legend, your goalie coach, McQueen Barron, former modern-day Monarch. How'd you get him to come over and join the Lions?
Well, I mean, water polo is a pretty small community. Yeah. And McQueen and I mean, we've known each other since his freshman year of high school. So when he was at Mater Dei, I was down at Cathedral Catholic in San Diego. And his coach at Mater Dei, Chris Segesman, was a former Olympic teammate of mine and a good friend of mine and a great, great coach. And so we used to spar with each other all the time. I used to bring my team up to Mater Dei to play against those guys all the time. And so I kind of like obviously got to know McQueen a little bit there. At the same time, I was coaching with the national team. I spent some time with the junior national team, and McQueen was on that team. So I got to connect with him there. And then ultimately what brought him here to J. Sarah was just personal connections that we have. I had another a former athlete of mine, Ryder Roberts, who was coaching with me, a good friend of McQueen's. And when Ryder moved, you know, I reached out to him and said, hey, can we get McQueen on board? And we started talking about that. And it just was a good fit. You know, like I think McQueen appreciates that I'm similar in approach in a lot of ways to like his former coach who helped him to develop. And he's such a breath of fresh air too. Cause like for a guy who succeeded at the level he succeeded at, he's like so down to earth and he's fun loving. I mean, and the atmosphere on the pool deck when he's there is like, it's awesome. Like the kids just have a blast because it like that's, I'd say what he brings almost more than anything else is like that just great energy, positive energy.
What does it take to be a good coach? I mean, I'm going to ask you personally about you when you're looking for, because not everybody who's a great player translates into a great coach. What is it you're looking for as a head coach when you're looking for those assistants that are going to help you in what you're doing?
In regards to assistants, like when I bring in guys like McQueen Barron and Alex Obert, who's with us right now, I mean, a big part of that is like guys who are very recently off their playing careers. You know, like I haven't played water polo in nearly 20 years. I mean, right. A little less. 20 years. So theoretically, I remember how to do everything, but then it's been a long time, you know? And so some of those details are really fresh for those guys and they can actually get in the water and they can demonstrate. And that's super helpful for high school learners, you know, like they want to be shown how to do it, not just told how to do it, but let me actually see. And, you know, and obviously I can put it up on video and I can point it out on video, but like I'm not getting in the water doing it. And these guys can, and that's huge. And then, you know, as with the rest of the staff, everyone's got to fill a role, right? So I'm thinking about like, okay, what is it that I do? What are some of my weaknesses? How can I shore up my weaknesses by pulling in people in these different areas? You know, you need someone to coach your different positions, right? So you want someone who's been a goalie, someone who's been a center, someone who's been a defender, you know, someone who's been an attacker. You want guys who are good with the technical elements of the game, you know, and then you also want a broad sort of tactical knowledge, which ultimately, like, that's my job. But I want people who can challenge me a little bit too, who could say, hey, what about this? Have you thought about doing this? Overall, in terms of what makes a good coach, I mean, ultimately the personality and the demeanor, I think, determine a lot of that, because you have to be true to who you are. Sure. You have to be true to who you are. And I think too often coaches get caught up in trying to be like somebody else, whether it's their former coach or maybe a competitor of theirs. And, you know, at the end of the day, kids see through it all. Like, they sense when it's not authentic. And so I think your personality will determine that. Like, I can't be somebody else. So I have to figure out what works best for me. But as a general rule, you know, patience, right? Like, is massively important. intelligence, especially in your content area, is hugely important. Ability to like connect with people on a human level is really important. Organization, frankly, like, and dealing with the back end of the job. I mean, today high school athletics is like requiring more and more of coaches. I feel like, you know, from the perspective of communication and liability and organization and all that stuff. It's like, so it's a lot. It's a tough job. It really is. It's a tough job. And so, but yeah, that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. Very few people obviously going to bring the resume you bring with you. Played in the Olympics, a four-time All-American at UCLA, National Player of the Year at UCLA in 04, national title that year as well. As a player, you talk about you taking the losses with the wins. You saw a whole lot of winning in college. Did the same thing. You got into coaching. You mentioned Collegial Catholic down in San Diego, which is an athletic powerhouse down, for people who don't know, down in San Diego County, almost kind of the modern day of San Diego in a lot of ways. Just so many great sports. Jay Sarah getting to that point as well. 5 CIF championships in 9 years, right? Just a lot of winning. you're a winning water polo player and coach. What's the secret?
Good question.
Can you narrow it down?
At the root of it, I think I'm driven by like trying to maximize potential. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's a big part of it, is like, I just like, I'm always thinking, how can we be better? Like, that's just been my nature from the time I was a relatively young kid, you know, just kind of like always just, hey, we're good, but we can be better. And like, let's hyper focus on these areas where we can be better. And that, it's a blessing and a curse, because it can be tough sometimes to be around people like that, because it's like, okay, but we're pretty good, coach, you know? And it's like, yeah, but to me, the hallmark of success is not actually whether you're winning, but whether you're maximizing your potential. And so that's what I'm kind of striving for. And I've been fortunate, I guess, within that, to be surrounded by people with a lot of potential, like as a player and as a coach. I've been fortunate to have people who possess that potential, and I try to do what I can to bring it out of them and make the most of it.
Couple more minutes with Brett Ormsby, the head water polo coach at J. Sarah Catholic High School. As we mentioned, the playoffs just around the corner for all the great water polo programs in Southern California. You probably could have stayed at Cathedral Catholic and just kept on winning championships there. Why make that move to J. Sarah? What was it that drew you to the campus there?
Yeah, great question. And it actually was not a lateral move. I had a move in between.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you're right. I was 9 years in at Cathedral, and we had just finished. I think we had just played in our fifth consecutive CIF final.
Right.
So we were like, and the pipeline was starting to build. I had started Del Mar Water Polo Club down there, and the pipeline was kind of starting to build at that time. And so you could definitely see where could have hit rinse and repeat for 10, 15, 20, sure, 20 more years, whatever. But I wasn't at that moment like motivated by that. And I think, again, it goes back to like, just kind of being hungry and driven and feeling like there's a bigger challenge out there. And so when I originally left Cathedral, it was actually to go up to Stanford. So I left and I took an assistant coaching position at Stanford University, and that didn't work out. Like assistant coaching, it didn't end up being a fit. And so I was very shortly after that looking for another opportunity, and more than anything, looking to come back down to Southern California. My family had all, you know, we had all kind of uprooted and gone up there, and then you know, we're like, okay, that didn't work out. And we're not really a NorCal family. Like, we're a San Diego family. We want to kind of make our way back down south.
Right.
But as I looked at, you know, what opportunities existed, I had already kind of passed things on at Cathedral. So to me, at that point, that door was kind of closed. And Jay Sarah reached out to me, and I kind of Google mapped it, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to live in Encinitas. That was where my family and I, like, we knew we wanted to be there. So we're like, okay, could I commute there? And I'm like, I think I can. I'm going to try it. So I'm 5 years in now to living in Encinitas and coaching in San Juan Capistrano. And it's been just a phenomenal fit. I mean, I've stayed because, like, I've just had massive support from the administration, from my staff, like from my department teaching. There's just so many things that have worked so well that it's kind of like, you never know the path that you could end up on, but that's how. So yeah, it was a little circuitous. It wasn't planned. Like I didn't just leave Cathedral and jump over here, but it worked out for the best in the end anyhow.
Well, it's all worked out for the best to this point, right? Another chance to win another CIF title this year. Certainly that is on the menu. Coach, we wish you luck. I know you got to run. You got a game to coach this afternoon. One more to go in the regular season, and then we're going to be following the Lions into the playoffs, and we hope you can bring home some more hardware.
Yeah, all right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach. That is Brett Armsby, the head water polo coach at J. Sarah Catholic High School. Well, we get a chance now to talk with the commissioner of the CIF Southern Section. Rob Wygod has announced that he is stepping down at the end of this school year. He will not be the commissioner going forward. And we're gonna talk to him later on about his career. We'll certainly do that down the road. This week we want to talk about the referee shortage. Referees, officials, umpires, anybody officiating a high school sporting event. There's a shortage of these people. I mean, we're hoping to, you know, help get some more people interested and explain the process. You too can become an official, and it's actually a pretty good deal. So, Commissioner, thanks for taking a couple of minutes and joining us this week.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's always great to be with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we should mention to everybody, you have announced that you're going to step down as the commissioner at the end of this school year, but we're not going to talk about that in this interview. We're going to set up another time, and your great communications commissioner over there, Tom Simmons, is going to help us set that up, we hope, a little bit later down the line, right? Still plenty of work for you to do this school year. Today, I want to talk to you about, I don't want to call it a crisis because I don't know if we're there yet, but obviously it's a big concern, and it's been a big one for a while now. And that is the shortage of referees, officials, umpires. They go by several different names depending on the sport. This is something that has really impacted, obviously, high school sports here in the last couple of years. COVID certainly didn't help anybody on any level. I think we've hopefully gotten through that to this point. But are we still facing this shortage? And is it still at that point where this is impacting the play on the fields and the courts?
Oh, yes, no doubt about that. And you're correct. But we had an issue really with the shortage of officials across all sports and really in all of our geographic areas of the section prior to COVID. If anything, obviously COVID didn't help us. It didn't help us rebound, so to speak, or start to move that back in the other direction, getting more officials involved and so forth. So it is a tremendous challenge for us. I am hearing some numbers have improved in some areas. We've heard from some of our football units that they had more members this year. I just was at a meeting the other night. The basketball, a couple of the basketball units have said that they have seen an increase in some new memberships. So the real issue is to get the new members in and get them trained and get them mentored, so to speak, and started. But then the biggest effect we have is the way officials are treated. And that's where it's everybody's job to really be conscious of that and how we're treating our officials so that we can hold on to them. Those that are leaving more because of the bad treatment that they get. And it's everyone's responsibility, our member schools, our coaches, our parents, our students, our office here. Everyone has to work hard on the idea of treating officials better so that we can hold on to them.
Sportsmanship, character, I know those have always been words and hallmarks of the Southern Section, even before your time as commissioner. But I know something that it was really important to you when you came in to really stress those things. You're right. You know, we're seeing parents, sometimes athletes, not treating officials in the proper way. How do you combat that? What are the steps you've taken as a section to try to alleviate that or try to stem that?
Well, we try to do a lot of training and workshops with our member schools. We talk a lot about a concept called active supervision, meaning that you are having supervision there by administrations and those responsible for the contests at their schools, but doing that in an active way. Their job is not to watch the game. Their job is to watch the stands, to monitor what's happening there, to be proactive. You know, we talk a lot about doing pregame meetings and pregame planning and sportsmanship meetings where you can bring the schools together before the game and talk about how you want the game to go and how you're going to address issues as they come up. So, you know, good administration is to be proactive. It's to be ahead of the game, so to speak. And then once that they're there, to make sure that they're monitoring what's happening and trying to really address and take care of any issues early without them becoming a problem much bigger as it progresses, if no one's taking any steps to be in control of it.
Obviously, football, you need more officials on a football field. The fall sports, you know, water polo probably doesn't take as many. The volleyball, you don't need as many. Tennis, you don't need as many. Football, obviously, is a big amount of people. Are there some, obviously, I would think there are some sports doing better than some others because of the numbers involved. Do we have many officials who do multiple sports across the board?
We do. We probably had more of that in the past.
Okay.
Some of the greatest officials, so to speak, that we had were actually teachers and coaches at schools, mm-hmm. where in their off seasons, they would officiate. If they were a football coach, they officiated basketball during the off season. And if they did basketball, they might do baseball or softball in the spring. But a lot of our educators that used to do that, in the way that their own programs have changed to becoming much more of an all year round kind of program, it's not really easy for them anymore to be a coach in one sport and then during the off season have the time to go out there and officiate. So we do have some that do that, but it was really a big pool of our officials came from coaches and teachers at our high schools. And that's not quite the same. And there were a lot of them that did multiple sports. We still have people that do, but, that's a challenge for us as well, just to, again, try to get the numbers to go back in the other direction and make it an environment that people really want to be part of. And that's our message to our schools. Make your school the school they want to come to and all that's necessary to do that. And so we really do talk about that and try to really emphasize that with our schools every single day.
The commissioner of the CIF Southern Section, Rob Weigott, joining us this week on Catholic Sports View. And as we look at, obviously our show here, we concentrate on the Trinity League, and that's a big league, a lot going on. I don't see as much Thursday night football in this league, although some, but I know a lot of leagues have gone to a lot more Thursday night football to help alleviate that. Is that one of the things that was put in place to try so referees can maybe do a Thursday and a Friday?
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that I wish people would keep in mind. With lesser officials, they're working more games.
Yeah.
And if anything, instead of being difficult on them and being hard on them, recognize and appreciate the fact that they're actually working more days during the week now because games are being moved to accommodate the shortage. Mm-hmm. Our schools don't particularly like that. They don't like to have a Friday night football game moved to a Thursday. We have a ton of lower level football games played on Wednesdays each week so that those games can be played. So again, if you're a football official, you're probably working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday doing high school football games just to make sure that we can get all the games in. So I hope people keep that in mind that these are folks that we're getting it done with lesser numbers. And the only way that's happening is that those who are officiating have been willing to work even more during the week to make sure that the games can be covered. So it has been a real challenge that way. And like I said, our schools aren't particularly fond of having the schedules changed, but then they have a role to play as well. They need to help us identify potential officials. They can talk to those seniors who are graduating, who are not necessarily going to go on and play in college, going to go off to college in the morning, go to school in the afternoon, go officiate a freshman football game, get paid $35 an hour for a couple hours work. And I would challenge any college student out there to find themselves a job that pays $35 an hour. And again, the way it's set up now on a Thursday and a Wednesday, you know, two or three times a week, you know, they can make some significant money doing something they enjoy, which is being around the sports that they've been playing. It's not just a football issue.
Yeah.
We hope our girls volleyball players, our water polo players, as they graduate high school, we try as athletic directors at our schools to identify them and really encourage them to get into officiating get them in contact with the people in charge of the officiating group in their area and try to, you know, get that younger pool of officials involved. And who better than our recent high school graduates, and who's got the direct connection to them, our coaches and athletic directors at our schools, who, again, don't want the games being moved or the schedules changed. Then help us get more officials so that won't happen.
Yeah, what a great way to stay involved. I mean, that really is something, right?
So as I said, they have a role to play too. Our schools and our coaches and athletic directors do too.
Yeah, for sure. What's the process? If someone listening says, hey, you know what? Hey, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. You know, I'd like to help out and maybe make a little extra money on the side as well. I've got some time. What's the process? How do they first get involved? Does it take a while for people to get ready to go?
Actually, it does not. And all they need to do is go onto our website, www.cifss.org, and it's right there on the main menu. It says officials and it says becoming an official. You can click on that. And what typically would happen is, depending on where you live, because our officiating groups are basically divided up by geographic area. Mm-hmm. So if you live in Orange County, you're obviously going to want to, or live and work or go to school in Orange County, you're going to want to work in Orange County where it's close to home. We have a chapter in the Inland Empire. We have a chapter in Santa Barbara. We have a chapter in Long Beach, within what we call the Foothill Citrus area. So we have different geographic areas all with their own officials associations, and we would just turn them and their contact information over to the officials association that they are interested in working. And honestly, Bob, that they'll get started within that day. I mean, they can get the information.
Yeah.
They could start getting information on the meetings, the trainings, getting their materials they need. And this thing can happen very, very quickly for anyone interested. So anyone listening, I encourage you, go to our website and you can learn all about it and get started.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've seen some new faces. We had a lot of the same people for a long time, and that was great. You know, with a lot of the recognizable faces. Obviously, in the media, we see a lot of these same referees. But I have seen some new faces lately, and some people maybe I didn't recognize going and doing games. So, you know, I think you're right. We're seeing maybe some renewed interest in this and get new people involved. And that really is important, right? You know, at some point, some of these older officials are going to say, hey, you know what? I can't do, especially in football, some of the sports where you're more active, basketball, and maybe I can't do it as well anymore. We got to get this new blood in here to keep this thing rolling. And as you mentioned, hey, $35 an hour, that sounds like a decent deal to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. There's no question that we want to continually be adding into this pool of officials. We will have older ones cycling out, older ones that maybe aren't quite at the level they were, so shouldn't probably be working the highest level games. And we need people to come in and replace them. And we do have some, like you said. We can continue to work on this effort to get more. And again, we just want to keep focusing on an issue that has been there for a while, and we really want to see how we can get it to turn around the other direction. But everybody has a role to play here, and that's the point that we really try our hardest to emphasize. Our officials associations have a role to play. They recruit, to treat them right, to train them right, give them good assignments so they want to stick around. Our schools have a role to play, identifying potential new officials, making sure that supervision at the games and the treatment of officials is good. Here at the office, be a resource for anyone and everyone who wants to become an official. We're constantly doing that and getting our message out. And all of us together are the only way that this is going to start to turn around the other direction. And as I said, there's been some examples where we're starting to see some movement and getting some more folks involved. And we just need to keep working on that and keep it going as much as possible.
How about the equipment involved? Baseball, you need maybe some more equipment than you would in some other sports. Is that provided, or is that people have to get that themselves?
Well, they do have to get it themselves.
Okay.
Because obviously it's something that is theirs. It's going to be their property.
Right.
So that's always an issue. I mean, there are going to be some startup costs and equipment you need to buy and rule books and things that you need to get. But that's why, as I said a moment ago, the officials associations, in giving out assignments to these new officials, if they give them enough assignments, they'll easily make that money back and more. And that's the idea behind it. Yeah, you'll have to put up a little bit up front. Some of our official associations have programs in place to help offset some of the costs for the new officials as a way to encourage them. And we certainly appreciate that. But the key is that they can make that money back. And hopefully they can, fairly simply, and of course go beyond that, being reimbursed, so to speak, for what they've had to put out up front. And that all comes down to the official associations making sure that they get enough assignments to earn the money to offset those costs.
Well, you mentioned the geography involved in the southern section is a large, large section, right? It's a, you do enough travel every year to know that. I imagine in some areas it's maybe easier to recruit than some other areas just because of the pool of people that you have available to do it with.
Right. And that, but we hope, again, there's enough flexibility with the size of our section and the way that we are structured that you could be someone, let's say, that lives in Orange County, but you go to school at Cal State Long Beach. So you go to school in the morning and you might want to work in Long Beach area because you can leave right from school, go to one of the schools in that Long Beach area before you head home after the game. We have enough flexibility for people who work, obviously, in different areas than where they live. So it's flexible enough that the officials can choose where they want to work. And in all honesty, in a lot of our sports, some of our officials will work in more than one unit. They actually can work basketball in two different units and take games in both areas, depending on what works best for them. So again, there's kind of a maximum flexibility for people who want to get involved to do what fits their schedules, work schedules, school schedules, family schedules, whatever they have involved in their lives besides being an official. I think there's enough flexibility there that they can do whatever fits their model the best.
Give everybody the website again so they, if they're interested. They
www.cifsssouthernsection, cifss.org.
Perfect. And I click that officials tab and then get
right
started.
There. It says officials, and then underneath that drop-down menu, becoming an official. You'll get all the information there that you can take a look at. And, of course, contact our office. I mean, there's contact information on our office for anyone interested in becoming an official to reach out to one of our staff, and we'll certainly get them started and get them to the right person that they can talk to about the next step.
Well, it's so important, and I'm glad we had this discussion because you're right. We don't want to lose games. We don't want to lose contests because we don't have enough officials. We can't afford to get there. So hopefully we can get the word out. We can help, and we can get some people that want to become part of this because it sounds
like
it's
a strong message because – we did, unfortunately, go through a period of being shut down. We weren't able to play. Student athletes were not getting their opportunities to do what they love to do and what we love to watch them do. So, I mean, to me, it would be such a shame that after getting through all of that, hopefully, and I knock on wood every time I say it, but getting through all that and being able to come back and return to play, wouldn't it be just a terrible shame to see us not being able to play because we don't have enough officials now? And I try to stress that message all the time. Our student athletes have been through enough, and for them to have to suffer more shutting down or more cancellation of games and more lost opportunities, I just can't imagine that just is not something that can happen. So again, we all have to kind of lock arms here and do everything that we can do so that we can keep our programs thriving and not have to deal with any more shutdown and cancellation. We've seen what that looked like, and we don't want to ever go back there again.
No, that is for sure. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us. So we appreciate you taking time and talking about this important topic. And as I mentioned, we're going to have you back on in a while, and we're going to go over your career, and we'll talk about it down the line. But I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it too, Bob. Thank you. Always enjoy talking sports with you, and we'll look forward to the next one. Take care.
Absolutely, and look forward to it as well. All right, that is the Commissioner of the CIO Southern Section, Rob Weigand. Want to take a moment again, thank my guests, Brett Ornsby, J. Sarah Catholic Water Polo. Good luck to them in the playoffs. And of course, the CIF Southern Section Commissioner, Rob Weigand. And I want to thank all of you for listening. We love what we do here covering the Trinity League, and we appreciate that you tune in and listen to us. We'll do it all again next week, right here on Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson. See you next time.
You've been listening to Catholic Sports View, exploring where athletics meets faith. Spread the word about our broadcast, and we'll catch up with you again next week at this same time.